This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Northwest and Delta Airlines filed for bankruptcy within minutes of each other yesterday. That means four of the seven major U.S. carriers are now bankrupt. United and U.S. Airways are already restructuring under Chapter 11 protection. With these latest filings, the problems that burden the large carriers are all too clear. They're weighed down by hefty pension and labor costs, pressured to lower ticket prices to compete with low-cost carriers, and burdened with ever-increasing fuel costs. Bankruptcy offers an opportunity to restructure and emerge leaner and stronger in a highly competitive industry, but not without some painful changes, especially for airline workers who stand to lose pensions, wages, and perhaps even jobs. Meanwhile, passengers wonder where their peanuts and pillows have gone. What's wrong with the U.S. airlines and how can they be fixed? It's Talk of the Nation. Later, a preview of President Bush's primetime speech from New Orleans and an update on John Roberts' third and final day before the Senate. But first, airline troubles and possible solutions. If you have worked in the airline industry, what do you think it takes to make things work? If you're a passenger, do you prefer flying low-cost carriers to the legacy carriers? And if so, why? And do you wonder how this might affect your flying experience? We'd like to hear from you. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is airline industry analyst George Novak. He's a principal consultant for Metis Group, an industry and government consulting group in Washington, D.C. And he joins me here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you, Lynn.
The last time four major U.S. carriers were concurrently under bankruptcy was in 1991, and three of them went out of business. Is there any chance that there could be a repeat of that now?
It's less likely than it was in 1991, because now we have a different circumstance, a different way that the bankruptcy court views these air carriers. They're trying to help them emerge, and I think that's both the administration's policy and a good economic policy to help them emerge as strong competitive companies that can employ a large number of people.
Let's define some terms. All of the airlines in bankruptcy are what we call legacy airlines. Maybe you can explain what that means and where they fit in the industry as it is today.
Good question. And the term legacy carriers comes from the fact that they are a legacy from the pre-regulation days. Pre-deregulation days, when airlines were regulated, when the government okayed everything from the airfares to the profit margins of these carriers. The four that are in bankruptcy right now, United, U.S. Airways, Delta, and Northwest, have been around for a long time. I mean, in many cases, 80 years or more. They are, in some minds, a remainder or a dinosaur in an industry which is now excited by the JetBlues of the world, mm-hmm. the Southwest Airlines, which provide very low-cost transportation and point-to-point transportation.
So they have to change if they're a dinosaur, or they're going to be extinct. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think they have their place. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have their place in the industry. They have their place in worldwide transport industry. A number of these carriers are the only ones providing international services. They are members of alliances so that frequent flyers on these air carriers can fly anywhere on the world, earning points just flying between New York and L.A. They can then use those to fly anywhere in the world. That's not true of many of the low-fare carriers. And so low-fare carriers offer pretty much basic transportation for very low cost.
Yeah. And that's part of the pressure that is on these legacy carriers is this competition from these upstart carriers. I mean, is that a lot of it? Does that account for the problems they're having altogether, or what?
It does account for a lot of it, because now they have to compete. In the pre-regulation days, they could sort of set their profit margins, and now they've got competition in almost every market. It's very easy for an air carrier to move into a city pair and to compete with them. So every time they make a decision on fares, even if it's based on the price of oil, their labor cost, they know that they have to compete against another carrier which has much lower cost structure, or generally a lower cost structure, and that they have to try to make a profit on that. It's been very difficult for them to make the adaptation.
Yeah. You know, it's when you're traveling and you're in an airport, there are so many people flying. Every flight you're on is packed. It's hard to imagine why the airlines aren't making a profit.
Even the low cost carriers or the low fare carriers, they're making very little money per passenger. And their model is they transport a lot of people, they get those airplanes in the air quickly, and they get that aircraft in utilization again onto the next flight, fill it up and move it. The legacy carriers haven't been as good at doing that. Their planes are sometimes on the ground waiting for feeder passengers to come in. They're larger aircraft, sometimes on longer routes. So they've been unable to do that. They've been unable to adapt to that type of system, although a lot of them say they'd like to move towards that model.
What about oil prices? How have fuel prices affected this situation?
They've certainly exacerbated a very bad situation. The airline industry was in dire straits prior to 9/11. 9/11 took a lot of revenue away from them and took passengers out of the sky. On top of this, the oil prices, which have been steadily climbing over the past couple of years, is just, in essence, a double whammy for them. And it's been very difficult for them to adapt to the change in passenger attitudes, the increased fuel prices, and increased competition, which really increases every year.
Now, I understand one of the reasons that Northwest filed yesterday is because it was trying to avoid making a payment into a large pension fund, a large payment into a pension fund. So how does that affect that pension fund? How is this going to affect the people who work for the airlines?
Well, it's too early to say now, but I mean, a very likely outcome of this will be that both Delta and Northwest would ask the bankruptcy court or seek the protection of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation to take over their pensions. And that is a dramatic change for pilots and flight attendants and ground workers who have been with these airlines for 25 or 30 years, expecting a very healthy pension in retirement. And suddenly they're meeting the caps that the PBGC puts on guaranteed pensions, which I think is currently about $48,000 a year.
Well, bankruptcy always sounds bad, but for the major airline carriers, it may not only be their saving grace, but an opportunity to seriously restructure, as we've been saying, to restructure the way they operate. So joining us now to explain how that works is William Rochelle. He's an airline bankruptcy lawyer and a partner at Fulbright and Jaworski. He joins us by phone from his office in New York City. Thanks for being with us today.
And thank you for inviting me.
So, in a sense, filing for bankruptcy will allow these airlines to clean house, trim fat. How exactly do they go about doing that?
Well, first thing you have to do is to assemble a cast of thousands. And by that, I mean literally dozens of lawyers and advisors of all sorts and investment bankers. First, to figure out what the problems are, where the disease is located, and then you set about cutting out the disease, closing up the wound, and saving the patient. And this is a process that can take anywhere from, 14 to 18 months to several years, and very expensive in the meantime.
Can an airline completely reinvent itself under Chapter 11?
Well, they don't have to. Most of them haven't. But those that don't, I think, are going to fail. The airlines who filed yesterday are, I think, at the beginning of a sea change in the airline industry right now. So far, we've had the legacy carriers nibbling around the edges of their business plans, trying to improve on what they already do. But I'm beginning to think it just doesn't work. You saw more drastic action taken by U.S. Airways, who today is trying to emerge from Chapter 11 by merging with America West. And I think we're going to have to see more substantial transactions such as that and more substantial changes in the way they do business if they're going to survive on the long haul.
Now, the airlines have a number of contracts with labor, their aircraft orders. How do they begin to deal with those kinds of contracts?
Well, typically, the first days or the first months of a Chapter 11 case deal with the aircraft fleet. Usually, an airline going into Chapter 11, frankly, has more aircraft than it really needs or wants, because they typically will have markets in which they are operating where they simply cannot make a profit. So the first thing the airlines do is to address the question of their fleet. They may also have too many different types of aircraft, because an airline is most efficient if it only has a very few different types of aircraft. So, consequently, what they will do is they will figure out what markets they want to serve and with what aircraft, and they will begin the process, sometimes very quickly in the first few days of the case, of literally abandoning the aircraft that they no longer want. That could amount to a few dozen or perhaps a few hundred.
Does that mean they cut back on flights then?
They probably will. Most of the airlines that have gone into Chapter 11 have come out of Chapter 11 substantially smaller than they went in.
What about their labor contracts?
Well, that will be the next significant focus of attention. There is time deadlines that force the airline to give its closest attention at first to the question of the aircraft. But following that, of course, and somewhat at the same time, it's the question of employees. And they're going to have to first, as the law requires them, try to negotiate with their unionized employees about reduction in their wages and changes in their pension plans and their work rules. But if that fails over a period of, say, 60 days, they can then go and ask the bankruptcy judge to reject or terminate their existing union contracts.
Now, I understand that there is a new airline bankruptcy law coming into effect soon. How does that affect this situation?
Well, it's not just an airline bankruptcy law. It's a major changes in the bankruptcy law for both individuals as well as companies. That new law will apply to companies or individuals that file bankruptcy after the 16th of October. So the new law will not apply to either Delta or Northwest. And frankly, the advent of this new law a month from now is one of the reasons I'm sure both of those airlines filed now in September, so they would have their cases governed entirely top to bottom under the old law.
What would you say are the prospects for these airlines when they come out of Chapter 11?
Well, as a lawyer, I tend to not view that the role of the lawyer is the most important in a bankruptcy reorganization. I take the view that management is most important. If the airlines, Delta and Northwest...
Mr. Rochelle, I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you off. We're out of time for this segment. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
William Rochelle is a partner at Fulbright & Jaworski. He joined us by phone from his office in New York City. We'll continue our discussion about the airline industry when we return. Give us a call, 800-989-TALK. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. We're talking about the economics of running an airline and working for one. Delta Airlines and Northwest Airlines are just the latest to take Chapter 11 protection. What would it take to pull them out? George Novak is our guest. He's principal consultant for the Metis Group. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to take a call now from Bob, and he's in Reno, Nevada. Hi, Bob.
Well, hi, Lynn. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Okay, I've got a couple points to make that a lot of times just never seem to be mentioned, but the legacy carriers, as we've referred to, by the way, I'm a 40-year employee with a airline,
okay.
One of those that declared the bankruptcy. But pre-dig re-regulation, there used to be what we call seven flag carriers in the United States, and those were at the one time Pan American, TWA, Eastern Airlines, Northwest, and Delta. And basically, what I'm interested in is trying to bring to the fact that we are the international carriers as well. And if something does happen in our industry post deregulation that these carriers all fail, basically it will have an impact also on our balance of trade, as the foreign carriers are also have had a very big impact on us by the fact that their cost of transportation, their employees that are much lower pay structure than we have here in the United States, especially from the third world countries.
Bob, I want to thank you for bringing up that point, because I wanted to ask George Novak about that. So I'm going to ask him to respond to your question. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
A good point that Bob raises is the difference. How does international competition affect what's going on within the U.S. airlines? And what does happen to international travel, U.S. carriers' ability to maintain international travel?
It's a good question. It's a very good point. The international carriers, or the carriers that we have in the United States that fly internationally, they do compete with carriers from the countries usually which they're flying into. They compete, you know, with the German carriers, the Japanese carriers, the South American carriers. But in fact, many of them have interrelated business relationships through their alliances. And so the health of the entire alliance sometimes takes precedence over the health of the individual carriers. So it's a very complicated matter now. It's not just single carriers out there competing with foreign carriers. In many cases, they're business partners now.
You know, it was so interesting when he gave that list of airlines. I just couldn't help thinking TWA, Pan Am, Eastern. You know, these were they were almost mythical at one time, those airlines, and they're all gone now.
Right, they're American icons, yeah.
Yeah. Let's take another call now from Kevin, and Kevin is calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead.
I had a question about the pricing of airline fares, and I want to give you an example. I lived in the Seattle area for a number of years. My family's from Michigan. When I would fly to visit them, I would take Northwest. And if I would fly on a flight from Seattle to Detroit to Grand Rapids, that would, say, cost me $280. If I would fly on the same flight and get off in Detroit, the exact same flight, it would be something like $340. And so that just illustrates to me that there's just something fundamentally wrong, let alone the fact that you can fly from coast to coast for $200. Is there just a fundamental problem with the way that fares are set?
Go ahead.
it's a good point, Kevin. Yeah. I don't know if it's a fundamental problem, but I can tell you what it is. It's profit motive. Because very simply, there are fewer passengers that need to get from Seattle to Grand Rapids than need to get from Seattle to Detroit. I mean, Seattle-Detroit's a major market. Seattle-Grand Rapids, however, is a minor market. But you needed to get there. And they knew you'd pay that to get there. And you did. And this takes place in both domestic routes and international routes, particularly to smaller cities. You will pay more even though you go through the exact same city. And it's the profit motive between two large city pairs. You have enough passengers and you have enough competition, but in those smaller city pairs, you do not.
I have another quick question. Knowing several people who are pilots, can pilots from Delta and retirees from Delta and Northwest fear the same future for their pensions as what happened to United a couple months ago?
Sure.
If I were a betting man, I would say yes. I would say that that one of the things that the air carriers will seek eventually is to void their pension liabilities, which are huge in both cases. I think combined, I think they're around $34 or $35 billion.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Kevin. And let's move on to the labor question now. Joining us now is Brad Bartholomew, a labor management consultant at Newfoundland Group in Fort Worth, Texas. And he joins us from a studio in Dallas. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Lynn.
What do these recent bankruptcies mean for labor? What are you seeing ahead?
Oh, it's as you've already alluded to, it's a tumultuous experience. It's a gut-wrenching, life-altering experience. It should be pointed out, we've already lost about 100,000 plus jobs in the industry. Both of these carriers that went into bankruptcy will presumably be smaller, and so there'll be more job loss. Wage and benefits will be reduced, and as you've alluded to, some lifelong promises of pension benefits will be reduced or terminated. So these are awful experiences for the employees to go through.
What about low-cost carriers that we've been talking about, these the newer carriers, the non-legacy carriers? They don't seem to have the same labor problems. Are they not unionized? What's the difference?
To answer your last point, two are pointed up right now, normally Southwest and JetBlue. Southwest is highly unionized. JetBlue is not. There's a lot of other differences between these two carriers and the legacy carriers. One of them is complexity of the operations. The hub-and-spoke legacy carriers tend to have a more complex system to run as they bring banks of aircraft into an airport. And then adds a lot of complexity, a lot of changing jobs for those employees. One of the specific things that was already alluded to, the fact that a lot of these legacy carriers have multiple fleets. In the JetBlue and Southwest case, they have one type of aircraft, although JetBlue is adding a second one here this fall. Southwest has flown for 32 years with one airplane. So when you hire a pilot or a mechanic, you put them through training the first day and get them out 6, 8, weeks later and say, okay, go fly or work on this airplane for 25 years. And you only have to bring them back, you know, once a year for some follow-on training. And in a lot of the cases, legacy carriers, you'll bring those pilots and mechanics back once or maybe 2 or 3 years later and have them in training on a different aircraft for, and they'll be in there for 2 or 3 months. So there's a lot of complexities of these legacy carriers. And American, who is not in bankruptcy, that's one of the things that they're trying to work on right now, bringing out the complexities so that their employees and their resources can be more efficient.
Now, we heard earlier that when airlines go into Chapter 11, they begin renegotiating contracts. Obviously, they begin renegotiating labor contracts. What can organized labor do for the airline employees to save jobs, to avoid loss of pension benefits and other benefits and salary cutbacks?
Good question. In this bankruptcy process, I think William referred to the restructuring or abrogating the collective bargaining agreements. That's through the bankruptcy process of 1113. He accurately described it. Really, there is basically no leverage for organized labor during the bankruptcy process. They're either going to negotiate a new contract with management, or that contract's going to be completely rejected, and the bankruptcy law allows the management to impose a contract. So they can negotiate the best deal. Some choose to work in partnership or work constructively through this process, and some do not. But whatever it is, labor, organized labor, is accepting an extremely bitter pill.
All right, we are talking about the airline industry. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. We're going to take a call from Jim in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. My question is, the fundamental question I still don't understand. I used to work for Delta, and then I was laid off, and now I work for a low-cost carrier. And the question, the thing I don't, and we have to compete with, like, United while they're in bankruptcy. And the thing I really don't fundamentally understand is, why is it preferable to allow the legacy carriers to, like, dump their pension funds and then to compete with us trying to make a profit on a regular basis, rather than allow them to go out of business and then allow another more efficient model to fill the void?
George Novak?
It's an excellent question again. I mean, I think what you have to see is the goal of the bankruptcy court is, has always been, whether it's an individual or a company, is to allow them to reorganize and to emerge as a productive member of society or the economy. And that's, you know, airlines do take advantage, other businesses do take advantage of their position in bankruptcy to make themselves more competitive, to correct past mistakes.
But when the airlines were regulated, and, you know, and we're paying higher prices, we're paying the cost now just in them being able to dump their pension funds on the American taxpayer, and rather than paying before, they're just paying later.
Jim, let me ask you a question. Did you take a salary and benefit cuts when you went to the other airline that you're working for now?
You know, I took I tell you the truth, I started at Delta in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have a lot of seniority, which is another issue you might want to talk about here.
All right, we'll talk with the labor expert there on that.
Right. So I didn't have a lot of seniority. So I had after 9/11, I had very few choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually turned out to be a wonderful thing for me, because I actually live in Colorado, and when I was working for Delta, I was actually commuting to work, which a lot of airline people do also. But the thing I've noticed, the main difference is being able to make changes quickly. And you have a workforce that is not so senior. I mean, at the legacy carriers, you have people working there for 30 years, and those people who have been working there for 30 years, who are tired and angry now and ready to retire, are not your best people to be doing your customer service jobs anyway.
Well, I'm not sure I would disagree with that entirely, I have to say.
Right. I'm sure you know. So you see what happens, and they're getting the best routes, and the airlines are trying to make money on their best routes. And because you have such unhappy workers, because, you know, their pensions are being, you know, dumped, and they can't afford to leave, and so they stay. And there's no retirement age for flight attendants. As long as they can keep walking and keep making it through training every year, they get to keep working.
All right, Jim. Some interesting points there, and we may get some responses from employees of some of the legacy airlines to some of the points you've just made. And I welcome them to call us at 1-800-989-8255. And let me ask Brad Bartholomew. Let me first tell our listeners that Brad Bartholomew is a labor management consultant at Newfoundland Group. And my other guest is George Novak, principal consultant for the Metis Group. And to remind you that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Brad Bartholomew, I think I'd like to hear a response from you to some of the points raised by that last caller, clearly saying that some of the labor issues, some of the problems are the fact that there are people who have been working for the airlines for many, many years, and they're angry and bitter about what's going on. And how do you respond to some of those thoughts?
Well, the caller brings up a lot of good points, and he touches toward the end there on the seniority issue. Seniority is the ultimate double-edged sword as an employee. When you're at the bottom of it and you're having furloughs, then you're the first one out the door. On the other side, once you get up to the top, as he was alluding to, it can be very lucrative and very protective. The other problem, though, however, being at the top of the seniority list, in other words, being there a long period of time, you no longer have the ability, as he described. He left junior at one carrier and left to another carrier, and it was really a sideways move, as he described it. The more senior people don't have that ability. So pilots, mechanics, flight attendants leaving in a very senior role in the airlines, leaving that, if they get bitter or mad or angry, would take, in many cases, a 75% pay cut to go work for someone else on a junior level. So seniority is the ultimate double-edged sword, and it can make people very bitter because they get frustrated and cannot leave, which is something that organized labor has put on this industry, which probably should be addressed or at least looked at if you're going forward. And the point about, you know, being bitter and stuff, it's extremely difficult at this point in time when your job is being threatened, your pension is being threatened, and as you alluded to, the load factors are, you know, skyrocketing. So you go to work and you see the tsunami wave of passengers where you didn't, you know, 10 years ago. And the other thing is, you know, passengers aren't always as pleasant to work with as they were maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
It's not as pleasant an experience to fly these days. I think we can all agree on that. Let me see if I can get another call in here before the end of this segment. Robert in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I heard someone say now is that the cost of flying got to the point where people that normally would take a bus are now flying. So it kind of – remember when people used to get dressed up when they flew?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Interesting. The other thing that – I think there's a paradigm shift in the entire way the airline industry works, and you're going to see Delta and the mainline carriers start to fall because of it. If you only have one type of airplane, then you only have to have one type of part everywhere. In other words, you only have to have one attitude indicator for the entire fleet. There's only one, you know, rear aileron or horizontal stabilizer. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to carry all that inventory of all those parts.
Right.
And it totally makes sense what Southwest. In other words, if I was going to start an airline or be an airline, I would be copying their model because they've made money every single year, and there's a reason they are. There's a reason that it works. It's like Walmart or anybody else. Once that changes, it changes. And the people at Delta or United or any of these other airlines that get mad at the management, it's the market is what drives it. It's not them. They'd love to pay a pilot, you know, a senior captain $250,000 a year to fly, you know, the big routes over, you know, to Europe or back or whatever. But if I can get a Southwest pilot to fly the same plane or at least to fly the same people on that route and I pay him $90,000, then guess what? $90,000 is the new rule. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Thanks so much for your call, Robert. Sure. And we're close to the end of the segment, but I guess let me just ask you, George Novak, final question. How does this affect the consumer quickly?
I think that's going to be a big question. Consumers are asking, what's going to happen to my frequent flyer miles? Are my reservations for my summer vacation affected? Right now, I would say don't panic, because in most cases, the carriers have kept those. They want to keep their loyal passengers. So right now, I'd say everything will probably remain as much as it was before bankruptcy.
Thanks for being with us, George.
Thank you.
George is a principal consultant for the Metis Group. We were also joined by Brad Bartholomew, a pilot for a major carrier and labor management consultant. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.